was 45-26 at halftime. They were down by 19 points and their season looked shot. But the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, with an irresistible second half, have punched their ticket to the Final Four. Phoenix by name, Phoenix by nature. It's Southeast Melbourne to the playoffs, 85-75. Also say circus by name, circus by nature. What a fitting end for the Adelaide 36ers of 2024-25. I actually made a miscue yesterday. I said it was 19 and a half time, but I buried the lead a little bit. Early in the third, they were up by 21. They lost by 10. They lost by 10 after they were up by 21, Matt McQuaid.
Indeed, Julian. Good evening and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody else listening in. the cliches come out, don't they? You know, a tale of two halves and all that stuff. You know, it was mind blowing. Great call by you and Tom Hirsch, by the way. I thought, and yeah, it really brought the nature of that game across the listening dial, as it were. So, yeah, it was amazing, because on the one hand, you had that Phoenix team that came out that did not look like the Phoenix, and that's something that Josh King talked about in the post-game press conference. The lowest halftime score, not just in their playoff history, but in their history, full stop, as a franchise. 26 points, they looked flat. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. Defensively, they had no answers, particularly in that second quarter onslaught from the 36ers, who were doing all this with Dejan Vasiljevic having one of the poorer games of his career. It was sort of that Montrezl Harrell, it was, you know, Jason Kadee, Jarrell Martin, and that were doing the damage. And Isaac Humphries and Dejan Vasiljevic, when they're two key Australian players, they did nothing. And, I mean, Isaac, to the point where he got benched in the second half, because it just wasn't happening for him. So, and it was obviously a matchup thing as well. That first half from the 36ers, capped by that, you know, ludicrous shot from Kendrick Davis at the end to make it a 19-point. Julian, honest to God, I thought there and then, this thing's done. Adelaide's going on through.
Yeah.
Phoenix can't come back from this, because that's, you know, the ultimate momentum was just with the Sixers. And you go into the dressing rooms, you're down 19, and you've laid a gigantic egg. You're flat. The energy's not there. Defensively, you're not there. You're struggling to get anything going offensively. And then defensively, you weren't really as committed as you should have been. And then, of course, they come out and they hold Adelaide to what was it, 30 points in the second half and score 59 themselves,
yeah,
which we know they're very capable of. So that was phenomenal from that perspective. But from Adelaide's perspective, you talk about an epic collapse. And as I said on Twitter/X, I've seen a bunch of them in my time. Ball crumbles. But I know it when I see it. And I was amazed, but then not amazed, because it really was a microcosm of the 36ers season. And how many times have we talked about it, Julian? The Jekyll and Hyde nature of that club. The fact that it was a circus.
Shall I get the music again?
Yeah, go for it. Let's go.
I'm going to miss that music.
It's so apt, though.
Yeah.
Because just look at everything that happened to this team over the course of NBL 25. And every time you thought, okay, they've actually gotten over the hump. Like, they beat the Kings in the play-in game. Probably wasn't, you know, a great performance to be fair. But again, it was on the road against a team that was desperate and albeit incredibly undermanned and had its own set of problems that we'll talk about. But they got through that. And I thought to myself, and they you know, and the Kings played hard in that game. They did. They played really hard. And I think people have kind of, you know, the whole business about blaming Brian Goorjian for everything, which is a joke. But apart from that, I thought undersold the fact that that team played really hard in that. You know, they were undermanned. They'd taken an enormous psychological hit and yet still fought hard. And Adelaide overcame that. And I thought showed good maturity down the stretch and made plays. And I thought to myself, the danger of this team, the offensive potential in particular, is going to make them such a tough matchup for the Phoenix. And I gave them more than a puncher's chance, if you recall. And then at halftime, I thought to myself, well, here we go. I mean, this is what I thought. And then I even started thinking ahead to Illawarra and thinking, how are Illawarra going to deal with this? And again, it was without DJ Vasiljevic or Isaac Humphries doing anything, really. So you had that potential there. But then it all fell apart so spectacularly, didn't it? And, yeah, I don't know where you start with it. I think one of the things about that team is when you put pressure on them, when you were able to get into them physically a little bit, which the Phoenix guys did extremely well, when they upped the level of their effort, their energy, their intent, all of that stuff. Adelaide has throughout the year had a tendency to fall apart under that if you were able to get to them, and they did. And you could see then the blame game starts. This is, and you and I have talked about this. This was a team that wasn't together. Now they look publicly, we're one. No, you weren't. I mean, the coach was fighting with his star point guard all year. Everyone knows this. Montrezl Harrell is criticizing Dejan Vasiljevic and on the court, and you saw that. They weren't together as a unit. And when that happens and teams get into them, stuff like that is going to happen. And it's just, I've seen it for decades. So I guess the end result and the lesson is that we should have expected it.
No, it's the least shocking outcome in NBL history. I have seen today.
Yeah. It was such a good message from you. You're on the money. The least shocking outcome was beautifully said.
I've seen a few reports and articles writing this up saying it's a miracle win for the Phoenix. No, it wasn't a miracle win for the Phoenix. Sydney coming from 16 points down with 6 minutes to go in game one of the 2020 semifinal series. That was a miracle. This was completely typical and stereotypical and reverting back to type for both clubs, the Phoenix as well as the 36ers. This was everything that we thought about these two teams. One is that you have to absolutely be sure that the Phoenix are dead before you start dancing on their grave, because they will kick open the coffin and kick you in the face before you have your opportunity to dance, because they started the season 0-5. They made it to the final four, down by 21 points, and they overrun the Sixers in a playing game. And this, to me, is a case for the Adelaide 36ers, and you spoke about meltdowns. And even going back to that 2020 game that you and I were in the building for against Melbourne, you watch that game back and Melbourne made some ridiculous decisions down the stretch. But even still, that felt like a bit of serendipity that the Kings had something special happen to them that night. That felt miraculous. Yeah. 2008 Grand Final Game 4, that was a miracle.
Oh, yeah.
This was one of the biggest meltdowns in NBL playoff history.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I really don't. And there's been a bunch of them, obviously. But, yeah, you're right. And just from a structure standpoint, there's structures that serve them really well. You know, the ball movement and getting guys isolated in favorable matchups and all that stuff. And the defense. I know the Phoenix just missed a ton of shots, but Adelaide did enough to kind of force them in a way, you know, even when they did have open looks, there was that pressure that kept building, right? But as I mentioned, once it was like the switch was flicked, again, I'm using, you know, another cliche, but this is what it is. That second half, you could just tell. And, the knock on Kenrick Davis, and I think Kenrick Davis has had an outstanding season, and I'm reticent to put too much blame on his head. But in all honesty, the biggest thing that happened was that he decided, you know, like Russell Westbrook, and I've been obviously giving it to Nathan Sobey for the same reason, I've got to win this on my own. I've got to go make a play. I've got to attack and try and make things happen. And the problem is it just didn't work. And you go away from what got you there, is what I'm saying. And look, he's a young guy, and look, again, I think there's a little bit of immaturity there with him. He's spectacular, and we know this, and I've said this, and I think at the end of the day, you know, if Bryce Cotton wasn't Bryce Cotton, then Kendrick Davis is probably the MVP of the league this year. You know, you look at what he achieved. You know, what was it? Only the third player in history to average 25 points and 8 dimes a game. And the other two guys to do it were the GOAT himself, Andrew Gaze, and our friend Derek Rucker. So, you know, you look at it from that perspective, and it's just hard to be critical of him. But the fact of the matter was, I mean, he's the guy that had the ball in his hands the majority of the time. But there was plenty of blame to go around. I mean, I thought Isaac Humphries, again, you know, the big knock on Isaac has just been he gets in his own head and he misses these bunnies, and you think, jam at home, man. I mean, you're a 6'11 athlete. You've got great footwork. You can get up. But he just, for some reason, it's like a short circuit in his brain, and he can't figure it out. And then Dejan Vasiljevic had one of the worst games I've ever seen from him. And this is a guy that's a proven playoff performer. You know, I mean, never forget him hitting that shot in game 2 of the grand final series in Hobart against the Jack Jumpers at My State Bank Arena that I was down there for, obviously. And that he hit big shots throughout that game and in that series. But in this game, when they absolutely needed him the most, he absolutely disappeared. So, and again, and copped criticism, you could see it, from Montrezl Harrell. Darrell Martin didn't work, particularly when, you know, they thought that overpowering front line, it probably only worked against Sydney. It didn't work against anybody else. What they needed was the glaring omission was a quality three. And no disrespect to Lat Mayen, who sort of played that position a bit, or Sunday Dech. But the reality is, if you replaced Darrell Martin with Antonius Cleveland or Justin Simon, what sort of team would you have? Particularly those two guys at the three spot. I thought that was a big mistake with Jarrell. And I love Jarrell. I mean, I never, you know, ever forget what he did for the Kings in that championship year.
Does that come down to the fact he was injured at the start as well?
Yeah, that's right. And that's the point. That look, he had that foot injury, right? And it lingers, especially for big guys like that. And you could see he's lost some of his athleticism. Now, I don't think he ever fully recovered from it. I mean, the Jarrell Martin I saw with the Kings, he was laying up some stuff that the Jarrell Martin I saw with the Kings, he would have jammed at home. And that's part of it. And you could see it. His movement was compromised. His athleticism was compromised. And I think that foot injury, because he's a big guy, he's had a tendency to put on too much weight in the offseason as well. It took him a long time to get into shape, even though they had, in my opinion, the best strength and conditioning guy in the league in Nick Popovich. And he did get fit, but it really wasn't enough. So, and then there's Mike Wells. You know, we haven't talked about him. And, you know, look, there's going to be a lot of question marks about Mike as a first-year head coach. I think he's a smart guy. I don't know whether he's been a career assistant coach, right? So I don't know whether some guys are not meant to be head coaches. Now, I'm not saying that's the case with him, because I think there were some signs with him. He obviously knows the game, but it's a lot more than just knowing the game. You know, the man management is problematic for mine. I think we saw that. He wasn't able to really keep this group together for certain periods of time. And as you said, that all manifests itself in what we saw throughout the year with this group, which was the greatest roller coaster you've ever seen, that they could be phenomenal and then they could turn around next week and be absolutely dreadful. I thought they'd gotten it out of their system in the back end of the season, but clearly that game showed that they didn't.
There were two moments yesterday that I think summed up the whole experience being there in the arena. There were two plays, and after both plays, I had the same feeling. This game is over. This is the first one, and you already alluded to it. At halftime, right on the buzzer, Kendrick Davis pulls off this.
Davis rebounds, still time, the half court heave!
Oh!
If it's your day, it's your day!
Oh my God.
You could have heard a pin drop in the building after that. And watching the body language of the Phoenix players as they came off, let's look at this half by half, because it is a story of two halves, Matt. The first half, when the Phoenix players came off the court at halftime after that moment, they looked shocked. They looked like they had just witnessed something traumatic. The 36ers looked like they were about to pop the champagne. I saw faces in the crowd wondering what the heck was this. I was watching Phoenix staff members look like they were about to start crying. It was, by all intents and purposes, over, because this was a team that could not shoot to save their lives in that first half. As you mentioned, lowest first half total in franchise history for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix yesterday. And it was, the game kept going. It's not like the 36ers shot that well either, particularly in the first quarter from deep, but they started to figure it out. But you could see it, Matt, that the longer it was going, it felt like there was a sense of they were starting to panic and they were jacking up threes, trying to shoot themselves out of the slump. And they were shooting themselves out of the postseason. And you see Kendrick Davis heave it from midway in his own court, and it drops in. The second that it went out of his hands, I thought, good. You knew it was going in. And
that's right. Yeah.
This is over. This game's over. Yeah. There's no way.
Yep.
Staggering, that first half. And at that moment, we all had the same feeling, didn't we?
Yeah. No, 100%. And then, of course, it turns. So, my understanding is it's something that Josh King kind of talked about in the post-game press conference. You know, if we want to sort of switch tack a little bit and look at the winners, that he actually said very little at halftime. It was more down to Sam McKinnon, his assistant coach, who I've heard gave a very pointed, to say the very least, speech at halftime and really got into them, as he should have. I mean, it kind of reminded me of and again, people say, here we go again, but 2004, you know, the Kings in their first semi-final game against the Brisbane Bullets were down by 20, I think it was, or might have even
23.
Been more. 23, that's right.
And I mentioned that because yesterday was the biggest comeback in a postseason game since that game, one of the 2004 semis.
Yeah, that's right. And it was very famous, and Brian Gorgian, of course, we've had on the roundtable before, talks about it, and that is that he really didn't have much to say at the half. It was actually Chris Carriwell, former Duke University captain, Sydney Kings import, who just laid into the entire team at the half, and of course, Kings turn it around, have this unbelievable fourth quarter, and win, you know, this amazing comeback game that sort of sent them on their way to the grand final series. It ended up, and obviously that five-game epic against West Sydney. But, yeah, it kind of reminded me of that, what Sammy did. And so sometimes that's what's required. And they came out, and it was just a completely different team across the board. And it was the Phoenix that we've become used to. So I really want to pay credit to the entire organization. I mean, I think, you know, what we talked about, the risk in – removing Mike Kelly. And people might say, well, it's not really a risk because he's 0-5. The team's not going anywhere. They're last in every defensive category, et cetera, et cetera. But it is it's any time, whether it's an import, a player, whatever it is, it's always a risk when the season has started because you bring in someone who's completely new to the whole thing. He may have his own ideas about how he wants to do things, whether that be an import, whether that be an Australian, whether that be a coach. So in its own way, it was a risk. And they could have, I think you mentioned before, they could have easily just punted the season, right? But they, and look, our friend Simon Mitchell, man, I mean, he stood up there and said, I believe in this team. I believe in these guys. And he was right. He was absolutely right. They just had the wrong guy leading them. No disrespect to Mike. I love Mike, and I think most people do as a human being. But he wasn't right for that team. That was borne out. So then you get Sam coming in and going 2-1. I thought that's really an underrated part of their season. And then once Josh King comes aboard, and again, he's coming in cold. He doesn't have a preseason to work with these guys. He doesn't have time to set his culture. You know, he's got to introduce certain aspects of the offense and the defense. But this is in the middle of the season, man, and he did it. And probably, had he started the season, might have even challenged Justin Tatum for Coach of the Year. So it's, you know, Romy Chowdhury, Simon Mitchell, Tommy Greer, those guys have to be given massive, massive credit. This team, we gave up on them at 0-5. We did. And I even thought, they might win, I don't know, 9 to 10 games. And that'd be a good outcome after starting 0-5. No, we're going to make ourselves not only a contender for a play-in tournament / semifinals, we're going to make ourselves a legitimate championship contender. And lest we forget, they're doing it without Derek Walton Jr., who's so important to them. And that goes to the next point I'm going to bring up. Everyone is going to talk about Matt Hurt's performance, and rightly so. He was fantastic. There's no doubt about that. And what a great addition he's been. I'm concerned about Joe Wieskamp. Yeah, I mean, that's two straight turd bombs he's dropped.
Yeah.
And he's got to step up, because he's a much better shooter than what we've seen. He's been more productive in the second half of the season, as we've seen, because I was calling for his head early on. But he's sort of reverted back to what he was doing earlier in the season. But I want to start by talking about three guys that were outstanding. Ben Ayer, for one, was tremendous. And it's not like we haven't seen it before from this kid. As Josh said in the post-game press conference, he's a good basketball player. He just gets short shrift because he's a little bit unorthodox in the way he plays. But he's tough as old boots. He can shoot the hell out of it. He can facilitate. There's a lot of stuff he can do. Angus Glover, again, just, this is what I'm taught. When people say how important championship level experience is, Angus Glover has got that in spades and just has a way. It's not just offensively, but defensively. And then Owen Foxwell and the job he did on Kendrick Davis, that kid was, dare I say it, it was almost Shai Ili-like what he did. He was fantastic. And those three kids stepping up in the way they did was phenomenal.
I got to also pay some props as well to Malik Lewis second half.
100%.
My goodness. Yeah. Some of the things he did off the ball defensively. You look at the stat sheet and you think, oh, yeah. But what he did on the defensive end of the floor in that second half, I think it made a big difference in changing the momentum of the game, particularly midway in the third quarter when things started to tip back in the balance.
Yeah. Grabbed some huge rebounds too, you know, real key ones. I mean, for them to do what they've done with Wieskamp being down, with Derek Walton Jr. not available, they're still not sure if he's going to be able to play the semifinals. I hope he does. I hope the extra week off gives him that opportunity, because they are demonstrably better with him in the lineup, as that particularly, I mean, this is a guy who's a Grand Final Series Most Valuable Player and led the Kings to a championship. So at this time of year, you want him in your squad. There's no doubt. Jordan Hunter, sort of quiet, you know, only played the 16 minutes, but, I mean, he'll be better for that. And he's another one that just has that championship-level experience. They're coming together really well at the right time of the season. And, look, it speaks to the character, and it's something I thought about as well. We're talking about Simon, something he mentioned when he was on the podcast a few months ago about how they were really happy with the culture they'd established even before Josh got there. So his whole thing was, we think we've got the playing group to be really successful. We really like our guys. We like the culture we've established in this place. So Josh is going to come in. He won't come in super cold like your average coach would. He'll come into an established process, system, culture that all works. And you could see, you know, the difference in the chemistry between them and Adelaide was stark. It really was. particularly when the chips were down and guys needed to make plays. Guys needed to be selfless, not selfish, play team basketball, not ISO basketball. They did that in spades. So I just think, to me, that was an organizational win as much as it was a team win, because it doesn't happen without the stuff that's put in place by Simon Mitchell, by Tommy Greer, by Romy Chowdhury. And then they, quite frankly, lucked into Josh. I mean, he's someone that I know they were looking at for a while, but I think he's been even better than what you would have expected. And now they're in a semi-final series. They've got a great opportunity. I mean, imagine if they win game one at the Wynn Entertainment
Center. All bets are off then.
And then look out. And no, you know, again, even without Derek Walton Jr., they've managed to get this far after that 0-5 start. I think it's just phenomenal, and I think it's a credit to the entire franchise.
I think, and we'll, by the way, we're going to do a comprehensive series preview of both playoff series next yep. week on the program. We'll touch on it in parts, but just off, on the off, I give the Phoenix a massive chance in this series.
Oh, so do I.
A massive chance. This is not the matchup that the Hawks would have wanted, because the Phoenix, and we talked about it all year, that styles make fights and matchups for certain teams are difficult. Case in point, Sydney, for whatever reason, just couldn't work out the 36ers. The Phoenix are an awkward matchup for the Hawks. They can beat them, but it's an awkward matchup for them.
Yeah, like you said, we'll get it. You're right. And like you said, we'll get into that in more depth next week. But yeah, that's what makes both semifinals so intriguing, because you can't, I don't even think there's a favorite in either one, realistically. I mean, I suppose you might say Illawarra's got to be favored because they've got home court, same for Melbourne United. But yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
It's going to be a brilliant playoff series in both the situations. And I also noticed that as we sit here tonight, a throwdown championship series is still live, which I'm sure the rest of the country will love that.
Julian, if it happens, bang the drum, we've got to move it to Rod Laver, haven't we?
Yeah.
Come on.
We'd have to
Come
then.
On now. You have to. Come on.
I'm just going to have a look, because I know that there's a lot of concerts on at Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah, that's the problem. I get it. Yeah, I know.
But still, there'd be a way you could at least get one of the games into the building. Yeah. It's not like you have to go across town.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
It's literally next door.
That's just me in my old age, and just remembering what it was like to be a part of a 15,000 crowd at Rod Laver back in the day.
See, there are some dates.
I'm 94, actually. It's scary. But anyway, yeah.
Just looking, there are some dates.
There's
definitely some dates in there. You'd have to get a little creative, and you're probably going to have the whole series at RLA, but you could have a couple of games in there. Put it this way. If it ever got to a game five, they'd have to.
If it was available, sure. Yeah. You'd have to at least investigate the possibility, I would have thought.
Just on the Phoenix, before we get into the second half and back into what's next for the 36ers, Nathan Sobey, what did you take away from his performance yesterday? Because offensively, he couldn't hit the side of a barn door in a hurricane, but 7 of 7 from the foul line.
Yeah. Kept putting enormous heat on the rim. And what I liked, look, he still had his moments because he's Nathan Sobey after all. But for the balance of that game, I was very impressed with him. I thought defensively he was good. I thought he made good decisions for the most part. He didn't shoot the ball well at all from the outside, clearly. And that's, look, he's as streaky as they come. He really is. We know he can hit them, but he'll go through periods where he'll go 1 for 10. That's just the way he is, and you kind of have to live with that. What I like is when within the offensive system, so he's not going complete ISO/hero/Westbrook ball and just, I'm just going to do it 1-on-5. Provided he does what he does within the context of the offensive structure that's been set up, and taking opportunities when they're there and not forcing anything, he's very, very effective still. So, yeah, I give him credit. I really do. I thought he was terrific in that game. And you know, I'm very critical of him. I'm one of his biggest critics at times, but I also have to give him his flowers as well and say that, you know, you kind of have to overlook the 2 for 11 from the field. You look at the 7 for 7 from the foul line, many of them big, the 7 rebounds and 3 assists and a couple of steals, and just the impact that he had in the game. And say, mate, you know, well done.
I want to play you the moment that I thought this game is over for the second time. But this was the moment that I thought, okay, the Sixers are cast here. And funnily enough, it came right at the end of the third quarter. Dejan threw it away. The putback is gone. Sunday Dej threw it away.
Wow.
Sunday Dej has lost the ball and it's been put in by Matt Hurt as the buzzer goes.
And this Artland crowd is absolutely up and about. A 6-point game.
Now, I'm not putting it all on Sunday Dej, far from it.
No.
But
no.
That was the moment that was indicative to me that this was going to go the way that we thought it was going. The 36ers were going to revert to type and the Phoenix were going to kick the coffin open and run all over them, because you saw the signs, you saw the little breakdowns in that third quarter. But that moment right there was the moment that it felt like the momentum flipped to stay.
Yeah, I think it's fair. It's harsh to criticize Sunday, who's been terrific. He's a terrific player. And he's one of those guys that I love, because he's not about the ego. He's not about the scoring. He's about doing his job at both ends, but particularly defensively, as we know. And it was unfortunate. I mean, what can you say at particularly that time of the game? But the truth of the matter is it had begun probably midway through the third quarter, and you could just, it was funny because it wasn't like an explosion. It was just, I think they ran off 15-0, so I guess you could say that. But they kind of did it in a very controlled manner, if that makes sense, the Phoenix, in terms of just edging their way back, you know, not trying to jack a bunch of threes when they couldn't hit the broadside of the barn in the first half anyway. But it was more just getting stops, getting consecutive stops, and that's how you're going to do it, getting consecutive stops and then sticking true to your offensive principles down the other end and making sure that you're getting good looks at the basket. And because, look, at the end of the day, you're not going to completely miss everything. It'll go back to the mean at some stage, which it did for them. You know, I mean, they still only shot 37% from the field, but hell of a lot better for the game, that is, but it was a hell of a lot better in the second half. And they just, I think at one stage, they were 6 of 7, and Adelaide was like 1 of 6 in that third period. And that's kind of where it all really started. But you're right. There are those moments, aren't there? And it's quite funny with Adelaide. I mean, we just talked about it. That Kendrick Davis 3, the bomb. And we both said, this thing's over. I mean, I texted you, said, this gone. It's finished. And yet that play where he gives it up with about less than 2 seconds on the clock and they convert it for the deuce. And the looks on those faces, Adelaide, it was like they'd been in a war. They were shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And on the other side of it, the Phoenix guys are literally dancing off the court. And you thought, and I thought right then and there, I thought, oh, my God, this is going to happen. So, yeah, I don't want to criticize Sunday at all, in all honesty. It was just an unfortunate play that happened at an unfortunate time for the team. But because it wasn't his fault that they collapsed. I mean, there was plenty of blame to go around elsewhere for that one.
No, it was symptomatic of a larger problem, but that was the 100%. Play right there. If you want to talk about a backbreaker that we thought that the Kendrick Davis miracle bomb was, that was the backbreaker, because I just saw the reaction of the Sixers bench and Phoenix bench, and I thought, we've still got 10 minutes to go here. This is done. And sure enough, it wasn't an explosion. Again, going back to that Sydney-Melbourne 2020 game where it happened in the blink of an eye, it was like a dam failing. It was like little bits of the wall frittered away and then it just whoosh.
Yep, it's a great analogy. That's what it was.
So for the Sixers going out of this season now, and we've heard through Code Sports that the 36ers are going to bring Mike Wells back next season.
Mm.
Questions on, will we see Kendrick Davis back in the NBL and back with the 36ers next year? What of Montrezl Harrell?
Yep.
Boy, there's a lot to unpack out of the 36 this season, and then where they go from here.
Yep.
I have my theories on what they should do, but what you think the Sixers should do and what the Sixers will do, I don't think that they marry up all that much.
No.
Anything could happen at this point.
Yeah. Look, I think, first of all, with Adelaide, I mean, they've got to get some stability from the coaching perspective. Obviously, look, CJ Bruton didn't work. Scott Ninnis should have been given an opportunity, in my opinion, but he was like to continue, that is, but he wasn't. And I guess, you know, Mike's, look, it was a losing record, 14-17. He's an American. Not that that should mean anything, but look, I'm kind of torn about it. One thing I will say is that Kendrick Davis won't be back in Adelaide. I just can't see it. There's just too much animosity between him and Wells for that to work. And look, Kendrick, I think it's fair to say, and I have mentioned this before, needs to grow up a little bit. And he's a young guy, and that's fine. And that, look, that's just part of life. That's part of growing and maturing as a human being. It's his first overseas gig. So you would think he would have learnt from the experience. But his relationship with Wells just wasn't great at all. I mean, they tried to deny it. Our good friend Nolan Ulich copped a lot of crap from the owner, Grant Kelly, about it, about his reporting of that situation, rather. So, I think it's fair to say that if Adelaide had decided to re-sign Mike, I think, look, I like the fact you're at least trying to be a little more stable and give him another year. And look, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think the relationship with him and Davis, I just, what I know of it, and again, from an outsider's viewpoint, obviously, but I cannot see Davis back with the 76ers. 76ers, they're rubbish too. Forget it. anyway, I love it. Sorry, Simon Mitchell. You know, I had to throw that in there, mate.
Of course.
I think that's going to be the real key, is replacing him. Grant Kelly might throw the kitchen sink at him, and it might prove to be something he can't resist. But I think there's a lot to be said about that coach-player relationship and how it – and look, he's going to be in demand, let's face it. I mean, there's already talk. You mentioned Code Sports. Matt Logan and Mick Randall, who do a phenomenal job with that. And they've already mentioned that the Kings have – it's been well known the Kings have sort of made those overtures already.
Well, you want to talk about a coaching relationship, Kendrick Davis with Brian Goorjian. And I know that Goorjian has copped his criticism over the last week, and we'll get into that in a little bit, which I think is rubbish as well. But the prospect of him, Kendrick Davis, that is, being coached by someone like a Brian Goorjian, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see what the outcome of that would be.
Be interesting, you know. And as I said, I'm a little bit torn with it. As far as I think I'm a huge fan of Davis. I really am, and I think he's been great this year. But he also needs reining in a little bit. And he also, as I said, I think there is potential. You know, from what I've seen and from what the people I've spoken to, and obviously there's a few people in that organization I know very well that. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of, the word you would use is mercurial, and it kind of needs to be reined in a bit, but not at the expense of how explosive he can be. He's one of these great small guards that have lit up this league forever, ever since the days of our great friend Calvin Bruton, Rocky Smith, go on down the line, and to the Jerome Randalls and the Ricky Graces and the Bryce Cottons, obviously, and this kid is another one of those. So he'd be great for the Kings as far as, you know, look, we can get to them in a minute. I sort of feel like I'm bearing the lead here with him. But, yeah, getting back to Adelaide, I think the Harrell thing is interesting. You know, I mean, Trez, look, he had not a love-hate relationship, but there were, you know, he had those issues with the NBL, but certainly not with Adelaide. You know, I think they absolutely adored him, and they took him to their hearts, and he felt that. And he seems to be one of those guys that really needs that adulation, if you like, and that kind of love. So it wouldn't be surprising if he came back. in all honesty. Because I think he also knows if he puts in another good season and maybe even a better season after, you know, he's obviously talking about going overseas in the NBL offseason. But if he comes back to Adelaide and produces, then there'll be those NBA opportunities potentially for him down the road, a la what Andrew Bogut did. So, yeah. And then, look, they're building around Isaac Humphries and Dejan Vasiljevic. They've got to get more depth. I mean, when we talk about Jason Kadee, obviously he's leaving. That's going to hurt them, I think, because, you know, you sort of miss that experience. They need to improve their depth. You know, I don't think their depth was anywhere near good enough. And I don't see I don't know what Jarrell Martin's contract status is, but I would be surprised. Yeah, he's a free agent. I don't think he'll be back. I think they need to get a legitimate three. As I said, like especially a defensive-minded one would help them dramatically, like a Justin Simon type or an Antonius Cleveland type. And then you also have to talk about, well, the culture there and is it good enough? And look, they need to run through a high-level process as well because, again, with this group, you know, this franchise, there's a level of expectation in Adelaide, particularly those crowds, man. I have to give them enormous credit. They were phenomenal all year. They really were. So they deserve a team that's perennially going to challenge for a championship, not just be a team that, oh, will maybe sneak into the play-in tournament or we might make a semi-final. This team, this franchise rather, should be competing for a championship. You know, there's a reason Adelaide's called Title Town. It's been a long time for them. It's been way too long. So as an organisation, that just needs to be their absolute focus in the off-season. How do we build a championship contender?
Believe it or not, it also depends on what you consider playoffs and postseason. And this is an argument that is playing out at the moment. And this is what the problem is with the playing games. And I'm calling it, for lack of a better word, it's postseason because it's post regular season. I'm not going any further than that right now. That is Adelaide's first
trouble.
That is Adelaide's first post regular season action since the 2018 Championship Series.
Yeah, exactly.
That is nowhere near good enough.
No, not for them.
No.
Not for that organisation. Not for that town it isn't. No way.
And it comes in on the back of a losing record.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you think about the pressure on Kenny Hinckley at Port Adelaide, right? You think about that. You think about Adelaide, the Crows. I mean, that whole dynamic. Well, it's the same with the 36ers. I mean, there's such amazing history in that place. And you know, I've admired them from afar as an organisation for a long period of time, certainly not in recent years, when I say that, you know, in the 2020s. But, it just needs to happen. And once again, if for nothing else, for those fans, they have been awesome and they deserve better.
Tell you someone else who deserved better. Jason Kadee deserved a better way to go out.
Oh, yeah.
He gave another strong, honest, hardworking account of himself yesterday.
Like he always does.
Yeah. It was a quintessential Jason Kadee game. Yeah. He had some really nice moments, but it was crushing to watch him walk off the floor after that and that be his last NBL game.
Yeah. I mean, he covered himself in glory, quite frankly. You know, I mean, I thought in a beaten side, he was one of those guys that can hold his head up. You know, 10 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. 3 or 4 from the field, 2 or 3 from 3, a steal. He was terrific and, again, played that role that I've always thought in the second part of his career he did so well as that super-duper six-man combo guard. He can lead a team. He can play off the ball. He's a great perimeter shooter. He typically makes good decisions, and he's a hell of a competitor and a great teammate and a great guy. You know, I mean, again, he's. I've known Jason for a very, very long period of time, and so I can say that with absolute certainty. And it's, you know, it's a sad day for me. And look, it's like everything else, Julian. Sports, you know, how often does a fairy tale happen for athletes? You know, that they get to go out with a championship, say, or even getting to a championship series, and then bow out. It often. Even for the great ones like Jace, it just doesn't work. It doesn't happen, rather. So, yeah, Sad way to go out, but he left everything of himself on the floor, as you would expect, and he can be proud of himself for what he did for several teams over the course of his brilliant journey in the National Basketball League.
Just before we move on from this game, a couple of quick notes also from Oz Boomers Facts on Twitter/X, which if you're not following that account, you really do need to, because you need to. Yesterday, if you include the play-in tournaments as finals games, it was the 500th in NBL history, which is a remarkable stat.
Wow. And
perhaps even more remarkable than that, in those 500 games, the 26 points put on by the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix was the lowest ever halftime score by a team that went on to win that game.
Yeah, isn't that remarkable? Only that gentleman that runs that account would know that.
Yeah.
You know, it's and you're quite right. I certainly urge everybody to follow him. He doesn't have enough followers, and that's ridiculous, because he knows more about the NBL than anyone I know.
And another one as well, that in 40-minute NBL playoff games, the previous record for the greatest halftime comeback to win a game was the Sydney Kings over the Illawarra Hawks in 2022 Game 2, which you would remember well because you called that game.
That's right, yes.
That was the previous best, and yesterday smashed it by nearly double. So that just shows you how ridiculous yesterday was. And it's even more absurd that we're not talking about it as a miracle. We're talking about it as we're reading a book to its expected conclusion. It's what these two teams have done all year, people. I don't know what else you were expecting. So that's how long we talked about this for? Nearly 50 minutes about one game. So there you go. We wonder if you can get any content in the week. There's no actual basketball. We just spent 50 minutes talking about one game. Let's get on to the other one that took place a couple of nights before. Ultimately, it didn't mean much in the grand scheme of things because the Sixers were eliminated. But the Sydney Kings, Matt, 12 months ago, lose a playing game on their home floor to the New Zealand Breakers. And then 1 year later, they lose a playing game on their home floor, this time to the Adelaide 36ers.
Yeah.
12 months later, exactly the same finish.
Yep.
You could have given me Winx odds. You could have given me any odds at the start of the season, and I would never have taken that bet.
No. No, and it's funny because I just remember it. I thought back to the first preseason game this team played, which I actually called with Brad Rosen at the State Sports Centre, Key Centre as it's called now, in Homebush. And the way that team played and the energy and the vibe, and yes, I know people are screaming at me. I get it was only preseason. But just the vibe that I saw then, the vibe that I saw initially, anyway, at training, I thought to myself, this is going to work. And I was as bullish as anybody else. Interestingly enough, at that time, and look, I can say this now because the season's over, Brian Gorgian wasn't as bullish on things as what I think everybody else was. And he told me that, and this is in the preseason, one of the biggest concerns he had was a lack of depth at the guard position. And that was borne out throughout the season, particularly when Jalen Adams suffered that back injury and was never the same, even though he had some monster games and obviously finished with, you know, 30 points, 10 assists, but also 9 turnovers in that game. It's pretty horrific. But it was interesting that Brian was scoffing at all these preseason prognosticators. He said, well, we've got 6 new players and we've got 3 rookies and we've got a whole bunch of guys that have never experienced the environment at Kios Bank Arena and all of this. And so he was certainly a lot less bullish about his team's prospects than what everybody else was sort of jumping up and down saying, this team's going to dominate. Look at all the talent, yada, yada, yada. But one of the clear failures of that season was the fact that they weren't as a group put together properly in the first place. And for people who keep carrying on about it's Brian Gorgian's team and he picked it, that's complete rubbish. So, you know, the dynamic was interesting because typically, yes, he has a large say and has had a large say in the guys that he selected over the years. but not so much in the Sydney Kings have established a particular way of doing things, which is more NBA-like than anything else. And that is, you've got a director of, you know, GM of basketball, who is Chris Pondgrass, and, you know, his primary responsibility is to build that team. So for the second year running, I felt like he didn't do a good enough job of putting together that team. And I have said that before. And look, I get on really great with Chris. I love Chris, and I'm not trying to be nasty to him at all, but it's just what I see, and it's just my opinion, and you take it or leave it. But I thought that was a big, big issue. Now, throughout the season, they had their moments, clearly, but then we come to this game. And so we've already had, even before this whole Xavier Cooks thing happens, we've already had Kelly Laupepe go down, who was starting to come into his own and would have been a real key piece, I think, in that game, particularly against the Bigs. So essentially, you know, Cameron Oliver was by himself because there was really nobody else that could deal with that front line. And then, of course, we had the third import fiasco, which, you know, should have been taken care of. When Jalen Galloway went down for the season, that it should have been taken care of there and then. It wasn't. It was left to fester. And then when it was about ready to finally happen, the whole thing falls apart. So that game, and then the Xavier Cooks situation, I thought the team played hard. I really did. I don't have any problem with the effort. But that whole Cook situation, that had to be so psychologically devastating to happen when it did. Now, obviously, they knew about it the week before. You know, the personal leave business. I mean, that was just an excuse. They knew about it. To know that your captain, you know, the guy that basically, well, wasn't the captain, but your leader, let's say, you know, the guy that was the best two-way player in the club, demonstrably. You look at him defensively, he was the best defensive, as Olgan Ulich pointed out, the best defensive player on the best defensive team by stats this season. So you lose that, and you lose another big in the front line, and you expect to go to war against an Adelaide team that has all that size. And that size was primarily responsible for them winning three games on the Qdos Bank Arena floor. So there are a lot of, and I probably sound like I'm making excuses, but these are facts. I mean, it's a fact. They were incredibly thin at the guard position. Sean Bruce and Isaiah Liafa, God bless them, great guys. Bruce has been an unbelievable servant of the game. I love Liafa's determination. He's a tough guy. He's hard. He's at it. He's physical, all of that. Couldn't throw it in the ocean all year. That's one thing. And then, you know, look, Sean, as great as he's been, he's an older guy, and he clearly has lost half a step to the point where, you know, you just couldn't put him on certain players because you just couldn't defend him. It's not his fault. It's just that physically it's just not up to it. So there are a lot of things that went wrong with this team that weren't anything to do with Brian Goorjian. Now, obviously a lot has been said on social media about Brian. There's been questions about whether he's still up to it. I still see a guy with tremendous energy. I still see a guy with tremendous intelligence, even at his age. I also have said that if I really believed he was in decline, I'd say so. And I'm not afraid of saying so. I don't think he is. Now, I might be in the minority in that opinion. That's fine. I just know what he's like. I know how driven he is. And yeah, I mean, look, did he have a great season coaching? No, he did not. You know, I don't disagree with that at all. I thought, I don't know about this coaching setup where the assistant coaches are given responsibility for substitution patterns and rotations and all that stuff. Oh, I'm not sure I agree with that for a start. And I'm sure that when they go through the process in the off season, and then there will be a process, believe me, that'll cover every aspect of the organization, because there's got to be, Julian. They've gone from being back-to-back champions to out in the play-in tournament in the first game in back-to-back years. That's unacceptable. It is unacceptable for that team. And look, I know there's – and one thing Brian said as well, and it comes back to roster construction, is that what he saw at the end of that game, you know, towards the end of that game, was that they had one playmaker, and that was Jalen Adams, and no one else can go make a play for them. That was a big failing, I thought, throughout the year. And it comes down, part of it is the guards, but also, you know, just guys on the wing that, you know, like a Courtnoy, not Courtnoy, like a Bolquil as a perfect example. And oh, I've been hard on him all year. But for the fact that he came in as a marquee and has paid a certain amount, I thought he was very disappointing. But I thought what it showed was that, you know, he's a guy that struggles to create his own shot. And you saw that. He barely went to the free throw line all year. Have a look. Look at it. Look it up. Look how many free throws he took for the season. And then there's people that will say, well, he was just floating around. He was stuck in the corner and all. Well, yes and no. I thought he was incredibly disappointing personally. So I would hope next year is a better year for him. Obviously, they lose Alex Tui. Look, was Brian perfect? No, he was not. Did he make some mistakes? Yes, he did. But do I think he's in such a decline that he can't return full fury like I've seen him do in the past? No, I don't believe he's in decline the way a lot of people seem to think that he is in decline and blame him for everything under the sun and say it wasn't him that won the bronze medal at the Tokyo Olympics, yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's been a lot of hatred for Brian, and I understand it. I mean, part of it's jealousy. I get that, and part of it is because he, you know, as, look, me personally, obviously, you know, I always use the caveat, you know, he's a guy that has, you know, someone that I've admired for a long period of time, clearly. So you can take what I say with a grain of salt. But I do believe that provided, you know, they go through this whole process, that in the off season and they build the team correctly, then I think he'll be back all guns blazing. That's just me, and people may say you're crazy. We'll see.
Well, I do have a bit more space in between this, so I can come at this for anyone that's going to say, oh, McQuaid, you're biased because you've known Gorge for years.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
oh, that's fair. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
that's
let
fair.
Me come
I,
in
I
with
understand
my,
that.
Let sure. me come in with my opinion. I think that some of the stuff that's been thrown out there is utterly crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Mm.
Because we're still dealing with a guy here that is coaching at a very, very high level. I want to ask people that want to move Brian Gorgian on one question. Who are you replacing him with?
Yeah.
All right. You want to replace Gorge? Who are we bringing in?
Yeah.
Who you got? 40?
The last guy they tried didn't work.
Yeah. You want to bring him back? Chase Buford? Yeah, that ain't happening.
Not. No, but if Gorge was to move on, I'd have him back in a heartbeat. You know, I mean, the funny thing is, there's ifs, buts, and maybes, obviously. But that whole Chase Buford situation, had they been able to work that out and he'd been there, we may not even be talking about Brian Gorgian with the Sydney Kings right now.
No, we wouldn't, because we'd be talking about the Kings with a three-peat.
Yeah.
And I'll argue that to the day I die.
Yeah.
They would have won a three-peat with him at the helm. But, and that's another, we could do a hypothesis episode on greatest what-ifs in NBL history. But
yeah, that's right.
Like if the Taipans don't get hurt at the start of the season. But with Gorge, this roster, that way it was built, the way that it was hyped and everything that went around it, you can't consider this season anything other than a failure. An absolute failure. And this goes on everybody. This goes on everybody. Now, when it comes to what was the biggest issue, you're right. I think it was roster construction. Now, another dart that's been thrown is, oh, Gorgian was away at the Olympics. Was that ideal? Of course it wasn't ideal. But here's where I see it with the Sydney Kings. Next season's the make or break. It's the make or break year for Brian Gorgian, and I think it's the break or break year for Chris Pongrass. Because after two back-to-back championships in Pongrass's case, and I get along well with him as well. I have a lot of time
and
for
he's
him.
Done
I have
phenomenal.
A lot of respect for him.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry to interrupt, Julian. I was just going to say, it's important to say this about Chris. He's done a phenomenal job.
Yes.
Over the course of his the course of his tenure with the Kings. I just think there's been some missteps over the last two seasons. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we all make mistakes. We all, and you know, you bring guys in, you think they're going to work, and it just didn't. You know, and it hasn't for two straight years now. So,
you said at the start of the season, Matt, you consider like you look at last season, you say it's a mulligan.
Yeah, which I did.
Back to back championships, you get a mulligan.
Yeah,
I'm willing to give him a second mulligan because the fact he's got back to back championships. Now, if this happens a third year, then you start thinking, okay, what's happening here? Now, do I think that you'd be insane to ever consider moving him on? But
no, either of them.
Yeah, exactly. But, either of them. I think you'd be utterly insane. But if we're still having this conversation in 12 months' time, then those questions have more legitimacy. Because right now, it just comes across as, you know, Reddit comment chat to me.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's not rooted in reality.
Yeah, that's right. And you're right. Look, I mean, the only I don't say this, and I've got absolutely no knowledge of this, but it's something that Matt Logue has brought up a couple of times, and actually in his latest article in the Sydney Daily Telegraph also brought it up, and that is the question around the relationship between the front office and Brian in particular.
That's the key. Now,
that's the key, and how that dynamic is working. Because I look, you know, I mentioned before, the thing about Gorge is he's always had a big say in players that have been brought into his clubs over the years. He just has. And because it's him and because he's got the record that he does, you kind of say, as an owner, you say, okay. Doesn't work like that with Sydney Kings right now. You know, this is, you know, really, you go back to Paul Smith when he took over and Paul Kind, and they set this whole thing up, and they had a guy who knows his stuff. I mean, Pongrass is a very intelligent guy, and he's well qualified to do what he has been doing. But that's kind of not what Brian Gorgon is used to or has been used to in the past. I mean, even with Illawarra, same deal. Like, you know, it was pretty much, you know, he was the one. I mean, I know Matty Campbell was there, but the reality is it was Brian that was, you know, he was saying, I want Duop Reith. I want this guy. And he was getting them. You know, I don't think the stuff he was trying to run, I don't think it worked with Cam Oliver. I don't think it worked with Jalen Adams. Even though I thought Jalen was good, I think Jalen is, you know, it's hard to criticize because, not criticize, but it's hard to analyze Adams in some respect because of that back injury that lingered all season. And you could see he wasn't the same guy that he was when he won MVP 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. He wasn't. And so physically, so it's sort of hard but also the way he plays, which is he plays at his own pace. Or again, it's funny because he played a lot faster when he was with the Kings the first time around. You could see that. So he was sort of, and I guess maybe it was protecting his back. I don't know, but that thing can linger. So I think at the end of the day, at a minimum, I cannot see Adams back. I cannot, Oliver, forget it. That's done. I can't see him being back. And then they'll look for a third import and work, you know, look, they've got some salary cap machinations to work through. There's no doubt because of Quoll being a marquee. Cooks, that's the gigantic X factor in all of this. It really is. That's a $1.2 million deal. We did go into it in depth last week, but it is worth repeating that is going to be a massive question mark for the ownership group. Is they've probably, if, and again, hypothetical, we hasten to add.
We still don't know.
The B sample hasn't come back either way, so we don't know. But if I underline, it does come back positive, then the Willemme Capital Group, the majority owners of the Sydney Kings, that's Robin Denham, Nat Denham, Victoria Denham, the family, have a massive decision to make. That's a giant question mark on the future of Xavier Cooks and the Sydney Kings, in my opinion. It really is. Even if it's a really minor infraction, I personally, I don't think when it comes to that, I don't think anything's minor, in all honesty. But yeah, that's going to be the gigantic question mark. But be that as it may, regardless whether he comes back or not, they need to conduct a thorough process. And it needs to be every aspect of the organisation, quite frankly. It needs to be, you know, how they built the playing roster. It needs to be all the stuff around strength and conditioning, you know, the coaching staff, how that dynamic works, the front office, everything. The organisation as a whole needs to, you know, really take stock and work through this and, you know, make sure that this team is back to being a championship contender sooner rather than later. And as you mentioned, I agree with you. I think if we're at the look, there's no doubt. I mean, if they have a similar season in NBL 26, heads will roll. No two ways about that. I don't think they're going to roll this time. I think there will be significant change in the playing group. I think Gorgian already said in the post-game press conference there's going to be three new imports. He pretty much laid it out there. So, you know, you can take that as read that Jalen Adams and Cameron Oliver won't be back in purple and gold at a minimum. And then they've got some decisions to make, for example, about Sean Bruce. Now, Sean Bruce is contracted to NBL 26, but do you take him through to another year with another year because he's another year older? That's going to be a massive question for me.
I don't think we're going to know anything until after there's a resolution with Xavier Cooks.
As a starting point, sure.
I think they'll be in a holding pattern until the B sample comes back and then they can make some decisions. But for mine, the big thing for the Sydney Kings is going to be that relationship between Brian Gorgian and Chris Pongrass. Are they on the same page? Can they get on the same page? Because I truly believe if they, and look, I don't know if they are or if they aren't, but if they are operating at their peak together as a tandem, I think that they will be everything that we expected the Sydney Kings to be. And particularly, as you said, if they've got some room to play with the salary cap, I have no doubt that they will swing for the fences because they need to swing for the fences. Because you look at the crowds they got this year as well, it was outstanding. It's been a long time since Sydney has been this into the Kings, and this has gone back over a few years now. But and Kendrick Davis is one I would love to see him in Sydney. If you don't get him, go back up the Brinks truck to Bryce Cotton, because I would love to see that just for the reaction in WA.
Oh my goodness! Can you imagine the Red Army? They would freaking lose their minds. Oh my God!
Reunite Kendrick Davis and Montrezl Harrell in Sydney?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a story? They're going to be, I think, one of the big stories, again, going into next season, because that's two now. That's two mulligans. You don't get a third. And I think you're right. If we're having this conversation again in 12 months, which I don't expect that we would, then you'd start thinking about changes. But the only way I don't see everyone as far as Chris Pongrass, Brian Gorgian, coaching staff, as they were going into next season, is if they decide that it's not working out and they walk away.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Mm.
So, Sydney, 12 months on, same spot. I don't think we're going to be having this conversation, though, in 12 months. But
you never know. We'll see.
We could.
We'll
see. they're going to be on the hot seat, though. In NBL 26, the Sydney Kings.
I think more than any other team. I agree with you. Yeah, especially because of what's happened the last 2 years.
Yep.
Same result, same outcome, but different reasons why.
Yeah.
So, but I think the reasons that it happened this time are actually fixable, unlike last time.
Yeah.
They weren't fixable, but there's still a lot to be. You know, to be excited about, but also there's the impending dark cloud of Cooks that's sort of hanging over everything at the moment. So you're quite right. It's probably going to be a situation with them where we maybe talk about it in 3 weeks' time, and yeah, we'll have more clarity on the situation then.
There already though are a couple of coaching changes, and they both happen to involve Queensland.
Yes.
Something's going on north of the border, and I'm not quite sure what it is. One has come in sad circumstances, but understandable. And the other one has come as a bolt of the blue Monday afternoon, Justin Schuller moved on from the Brisbane Bullets.
Yeah.
Matt, I want your first take on this before I come in with the long run.
Hopefully with permission, I hope Matt and Mick don't mind, but Thursday, February the 6th, 2025, I have to read this to you because I just think it's so amazing, you know, like how this happens all the time when you've got a coach that thinks, yeah, I'm rock solid. Everyone's behind me. The board's behind me, et cetera, et cetera. I'm okay. I'm under contract. So this is cross court in the Daily Telegraph. So it starts, Brisbane will launch an independent review into an injury riddled NBL campaign that will mark a sixth straight season without making the finals amid speculation around Justin Schuller's coaching future. And it just sort of goes on to say, as Cross Court looks at the teams out of the running for the NBL playoffs, Bullets chief executive Malcolm Watts confirmed the review plan. We do a review every season, but due to the significant spike in our injuries and the impact that that's had on our results, we're going to bring in an independent party to review that and then use those learnings to make decisions for the betterment of the club, Watts said. Now, here's the key paragraph. Schuller scoffed at suggestions. The review was a sign that he was under pressure to keep his job. I'm going to into my third year and going to be talking to the club about what it looks like past that pretty soon. So past the third year. There's nothing going on with me, and I'm excited for what we're going to do in years to come, Schuller said. We're obviously frustrated with injuries impacting the way our years ended up, but our process will be the same as always. We'll review, as we always do, players, staff, every element of the club. And then the axe falls, Julian.
Oh, my sweet summer child. Justin. Oh, my sweet summer child.
I know.
Justin, you're going to need to sit down for this one.
Yeah, I know. Look, I shouldn't laugh. That's disrespectful. It's never a good thing when a guy loses his job. But I was surprised in a way and not surprised in another way. Look, the Bullets, you know, Malcolm Watts, executive of the year, by the way, has done a really good job kind of building the off-court stuff. You know, the move to Boondall obviously was a big one. Apparently, commercially, they've done very well this year. Crowds are obviously up. There's a little more excitement, a little more connectivity between that great Brisbane community and the Bullets, which has been a real problem for them for decades, in all honesty. So they've made some positive strides. But then I guess what you're looking at with Justin, it unfortunately, as the saying goes, it's a wins and losses league. And he just wasn't able to get it done from that perspective with his club. I actually think it might be damning with faint praise, but I think he's an excellent developer of talent. And I think he's probably at this level more suited as a really, really good assistant coach. Or he's got the runs on the board at a junior level as a head coach. And maybe that's where he fits. As a head coach of a professional basketball team, it's a completely different paradigm to what he's been before and in previously. And as I said, he's a great – look, he knows his stuff, Justin. Everybody who knows has had anything to do with him knows that he's a guy that really understands the game and is a really good teacher of the game. So maybe it's just one of those instances where he's just not meant to be a head coach, at least not now, of an NBL program. And let's be honest. I mean, Brisbane still, you know, need to get that program to at least a play-in / semi-final level. And they need to make some changes. I was surprised in one respect, as I said, because I thought there were times that, you know, he did a reasonable job and he certainly, you know, got some of those guys up and firing, but at the end of the day, he's still losing a lot of games. And I think the Bullets, where they're at right now, I think that organization realizes that they're trying to you know, drive the whole Boondall thing. They're trying to drive the connection in the community, as I said before. Part of that, a big, big part of that has got to be, you've got to be legitimate. You've got to be a contender. You can't just be a team that's making up the numbers, which they have for years, And Justin, unfortunately, look, you know, it had some good moments, but overall, and that's what they're looking at, right? Overall, it's just, yeah, it's they needed to go in a different direction, in my opinion.
From my perspective, if they don't have someone in mind, or someone targeted, or a couple of people targeted that are reputable and have some serious experience, then I don't know what the positive is for moving a guy on after a season where you have actually shown some green shoots for the first time in forever.
That's fair.
And granted, they started poorly as well, and we were talking about the Phoenix Bullets game at the start of the year where loser gets sacked, and ultimately we were proven right because Mike Kelly was fired the next morning.
Yeah, there you go.
But Brisbane, they were decimated by injuries.
Yeah, they were.
They were absolutely playoff contenders. They were playoff contenders. And I think if they stay healthy
for a while,
I think they probably get in there ahead of Adelaide.
Yeah, they might very well. Yeah, it's a great point. Absolutely, it's a great point.
I think that unless they've got someone in mind or someone lined up, or they've got a couple of guys, they're going, okay, these are reputable guys, either NBL or overseas experience. Put it this way. If they go and get someone untested and put them in this position, then it's another Bullets moment. Because I think that Justin Schuler deserved and probably should have gotten another go around with it. And if we're in the same scenario 12 months later, then yeah, absolutely. And look, I can understand you made a lot of valid points and I agree with a lot of what you're saying. It is a wins and losses league. But
yeah, fundamentally,
we basically put the line on Brisbane and wrote them off at the early point of January because of the injuries. But prior to that, and I will stand by this, if they don't have that injury run late, they make the sixth seed ahead of Adelaide.
Mm.
And they probably get a 500 record or better. So when I saw this, I thought, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, he's the scapegoat.
You just can't get out of your own way.
It's fair. From the injuries, definitely. I mean, they were decimated. There's no two ways about that. I mean, it's crazy. And it seemed to be a year for it, unfortunately, for a lot of clubs. But yeah, I look, you just hope that as a Bullets fan, if you're a Bullets fan, that you hope that they've got either someone in mind that they think is going to be a real game changer for them, or that they're going to conduct a proper search, not just a search that really isn't one that they've already, we're just going to elevate this guy or that guy, whoever it is. But a proper, professional, dedicated coaching search from around the world. Because let's face it, we know there's a lot of coaches that want to coach in the NBL. There really is around the world. They're just, our little old league here in Australia has an enormous amount of respect and guys that want. I mean, Josh King, perfect example.
Well, you know what, Matt? If the Bullets, and I'm just reading this statement here from the Bullets talking about we're running a process to identify the best person, et cetera, et cetera. We're taking the next step. All right, you want to take the next step, Brisbane? Go make an offer to Chase Buford.
Oh, that's interesting.
Go get someone legitimate like that.
Yeah.
Because if you do, then okay, I'm on board with this.
Weaver's another one potentially.
Yeah, Will Weaver. Guys that have got NBL experience or another Josh King, someone out there who's got experience in Europe. But if you're going to elevate a career assistant coach, then I'm going to come on this program and play the circus music for Brisbane again because it will be Brisbane reverting back to type just as they were getting themselves out of the hole they've dug themselves since 2019 when they made that one playoff series and were swept, but they weren't even there.
Yeah.
You better have something good in store, Brisbane, because I haven't got the circus music yet, but I've got it queued up.
But we need them to, Julian.
Yes.
How many times have we said it? Third largest market in the country, all that amazing history. You've got a statue of the greatest ever, Leroy Loggins, in front of Boondall. I mean, and what that club meant to Brisbane back in the day. And I know it was a long time ago, I get it, but that still means something. It's got to mean something. So they need to, pull their finger out and start, turning into that team again, that dynastic type Brisbane Bullets. and the energy and the again, the, I use that word connectivity with a community, all of that amazing stuff. They've got to get back to that because it was a special thing. It really was. I mean, anybody like me that was around back then, and it was during the NBL's first so-called boom that they called it. Yeah, that organization means a lot to the league, and they need to get. It's like with the Kings; it's the same deal. You know, you need a powerful Brisbane, I believe, especially in that market.
Sam McKinnon went on radio this afternoon and said that he was interested in the role.
Yeah, I it's interesting because you know we just talked about it before, right? That he made that impassioned speech at halftime of that game. And of course, you know, he's a guy who won a championship with Brisbane all those years ago and coached as well. And so it's interesting with Sam, you know, it's like, I think he needs to be part of the conversation. I'll say that. Now, I've got a lot of time for Sammy, you know, personally, I always have, but yeah, I mean, you'd certainly have him. It'd be worth the conversation at the very least.
For the reasons that Brisbane have just basically announced to the world of we want to take that next step forward, we're ambitious. If they got Sam McKinnon, I don't know if that quite ticks those boxes. I think Sam McKinnon deserves an opportunity at NBL level, and you know what? The more I think about it, somewhere like a Cairns might suit him to the T. Because we know that Cairns have got an opening now on the back of Adam Ford deciding to move on last week, and I can't help but tip my hat. There's nothing I can say other than just a hat tip, despite all the issues that he had this season with injuries. Jeez, man, they're going to miss him in Cairns because I would have loved to have seen him have one last go around with them. He copped plenty of heat throughout the season for the record that they had. Fair enough, when you go on that sort of a losing streak, you need to come under that sort of criticism. But, jeez, the man can coach. He's a serious, serious talent. And he's made that place special. Not this season, obviously, with the injuries, but I thought he had a great run overall with Cairns.
Look, the record doesn't show it. You know, I mean, he finishes with Cairns with a 44% win-loss record, 49-62, 8-21 this year. He was the coach of the year a couple of years ago, as we said, and that proved a lot. As far as I was concerned, I mean, he was a great assistant at Perth, fantastic assistant, and was lauded for that. Then got put into a really impossible situation with the Kings, and still ended up with a winning record at the end of the day, even though he came in last minute when Weaver went to the Houston Rockets. So, yeah, and then up in Cairns, and it's a completely different situation again because it's the lowest payroll by a mile. They don't have the resources. They're all about the community. It's community owned. They don't have the wherewithal to go and get, you know, high profile Australians. They have to kind of recruit kids and try and build them up and develop them. And that's what he did exceptionally well. You know, you look at Taron Armstrong and you know what he's done year to year. That kid, to the point where now he's probably never going to play in the NBL. Well, not in the short term anyway, short to medium term, he's probably going to play in the NBA, at least in the G League, with an opportunity to get a two-way with someone because he's just that damn talented. But that was Adam Ford. Adam Ford gave him the keys and said, I believe in you, young man, and you're going to lead this team. And if it wasn't for the injuries that Taron suffered, I think, you know, we would have been looking at an all NBL talent this year, in my opinion. So, and even then, I mean, his last game, last home game, he, you know, goes for a triple double, the only one in the league this season, incredibly enough. So that's one. I always go back to Alexander Heakin-Stitcher, and he's a perfect example. And this is a kid, didn't go to college, came from the NBL One East program, my inner West Bulls. Obviously, I've had an enormous amount to do with him. But he turned him from an afterthought into a kid that's now probably going to get a contract next season, which I'm absolutely thrilled about if it comes to pass because, I'm one of his biggest fans, clearly. But that's another example of development of talent. And look, he wasn't for everybody. You know, I mean, he's a tough SOB, 40, but it's all in the best interests of the team and the individual. And Again, his record doesn't accurately reflect the kind of coach that he is, in my opinion. And I think the NBL will be poorer for him leaving. I think he's going to be hard to replace. He's a culture driver. He's a tone setter. He sets very high standards for his players. He doesn't make excuses. He's a quality guy. Anybody who knows him the way I do would say that, you know. And yeah, I've got enormous time for him. I'm sad to see him go, and I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see who replaces him. There's been talk about Kerry Williams, who I think probably deserves an opportunity now. But I, you know, it's hard when you sort of get a guy like that and then he goes. He's obviously going to be acting as an advisor from afar, but clearly, you know, his focus will be on his next gig, which by all accounts is going to be overseas. So, yeah, sad for me personally, and I think it's sad for Cairns as well that 40's out of there.
I'm just happy that he went out on his own terms.
Yeah.
Because it very easily could have not been the case. And
sure.
Look, the run that Cairns had this season, it's easy to point to the record, but again, we came on to this program about a month into the season. We sang Cairns' praises for about good 30,
you could
40
see
minutes.
It. Yeah, you could see it. You could see what was building.
Yeah.
And then, sorry to interrupt, but the thing about them, like everybody says, oh, everybody's got injuries. And that's fair. I get that. But if there was one team that could not withstand the kind of injuries that they had, it was Cairns, and be competitive. They just couldn't. Didn't have the depth, didn't have the experience. And you say, look, that's just an excuse. It's next man up mentality. Well, who are the next men up? Yeah, development players, kids that aren't experienced at this level. And, you know, and then the resources, they just don't have those resources that other teams enjoy. So I know it sounds like an excuse, but it's fact. So, yeah, I mean, he did extremely well, in my opinion, with what he had. People, you know, the more cynical among us might say, well, look at his overall record, and he was 8 of 21, he lost 15 straight. Some of those games, they were blown out, but I kind of tend to look beyond that with them and look at the overall club and look what he meant to that club. So I think they'll miss him, but as ever, we move on, and hopefully he's set up the next guy for success in NBL 26 and beyond.
Where else but Queensland can you find an NBL coaching vacancy right now? That I guess, is that going to be the last of it, do you think? Do you think we might see some more movement?
Well, who, mate, look, nothing shocks me anymore. Like, not with NBL 25. It's been ultimate craziness, hasn't it? So, I mean, look, who's to say? You know, we just talked about Brian Gorgian. I mean, like, I don't think this will happen. But, look, nothing would surprise me. Nothing.
Do you think Illawarra might have some trouble holding on to Justin Tatum?
So that's another one. Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about Illawarra yet, obviously, because I'm not going to talk about them until next week. But the job he's done, the profile that he has, you hate to think that he would leave after a year and a half, but he's going to have some offers. I think it's fair to say. Now, it's going to come back to, obviously, look, he loves it here. I talked to him, he loves it. But if an opportunity came up as an assistant coach in the NBA, say, or even somewhere in Asia where he's just being paid ludicrous money, then, yeah, the Hawks would have a massive fight on their hands to keep him, and particularly if he wins a championship. You know, it could be the straw that broke the camel's back, and he'll just get so many offers and offers that where he might want to go home to the States and be closer to his family. So who knows? Fingers crossed it doesn't happen, that he stays at least one more year. He's just been... What a fantastic addition, not just Illawarra and what he's done, but in turning that whole thing around, but just the NBL itself. You know, I just think it's been great to have him. and I don't want to see him leave personally. I don't. But that's unfortunately, Julian, it's the nature of the beast, right?
Yeah. Where the NBL sits in the scheme of the basketball world, and I'd love to see him go around at least one more season, regardless of a potential championship or not. Who knows? He's going to get plenty of offers, though. If for nothing else, the name recognition. But he has done an amazing job with the Hawks. And we're going to see them now take on the Phoenix. That series gets underway Friday week. So we have our schedules set. Thursday, February 27, Game 1 in Melbourne as United take on the Wildcats. The next night, the Hawks and the Phoenix in Wollongong. And Saturday, March 1, Game 2 in Perth, the Wildcats hosting United at RAC Arena. Yep, they've managed to pry Kylie out of the arena. They'll be okay to go.
Yeah, Kylie.
I do wonder if Melbourne United may have played a role in that just to make sure that RAC is free.
Yeah, exactly. They love that joint.
John Cain Arena West. Then Sunday, March 2, 2:30 p.m., John Cain Arena, Game 2, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix against the Illawarra Hawks. And if we need a Game 3, it will be Tuesday, March 4th for United and the Wildcats, and Wednesday, March the 5th for the Hawks and the Phoenix. One last thing to mention before we finish up for this week as well when it comes to what is ahead. The Phoenix have not gotten the opportunity to have a home playoff game until yesterday with fans in attendance. Because, of course, we remember their first run in that semi-final series against United was played behind closed doors.
Yeah, we should know we were there.
The crowd yesterday, it wasn't the biggest that we've seen from the Phoenix. I thought it was a little disappointing. They had one section curtained off in the in the second tier, the final count, 6-1-1-8. All I can
still pretty good. Almost as many as what the Kings had, let's remember.
Yeah, well, look, it still comes to the newness of the playing game as well with Australian sporting public psyche. But I just am so excited about, regardless of where this series sits, when we get to Game 2, the Phoenix and the Hawks, March the 2nd, just because they're finally going to get that opportunity, the Phoenix fans, to see their team in a playoff game, doesn't matter what interpretation you use, this is a playoff game.
Final. Bloody hell, this playoff. The NBL, it drives me nuts. They change their minds about the nomenclature, if you like. It seems like every year. It's ludicrous. Let's figure this thing out, people. It ain't that hard. It's a semi-final.
I'm fine with championship series. I don't like the idea of calling it the playoffs when it's the semi-final series. That's just confusing.
Well, I mean, what's even more confusing is how they interpret the play-in tournament. Is it a finals? Is it not a finals? Is it a playoff? Is it not? I mean, come on. Yeah, and they change. As I said, it seems like they change it every year. It just drives me mental. You know, that they just can't settle on one thing. Settle on it and then promote the hell out of it. Like, this changing and it's this and it's that and it's, no, it's a finals. No, it's a playoffs. No, it's not a semi. It's not a grand final. It's a championship. Whatever. Oh, just, for God's sake, just figure it out. and be consistent every single year with it and don't keep changing the bloody thing. Ugh.
What else will change again next year?
Oh, I'm pissed. I'm not happy about it.
We'll have the NBL finals instead of the championship series next year.
Well, they've already been the NBL finals. They've got to think of something else to call it. Maybe they go back to a grand final. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. We've got the play-in tournament. We've got the play-in game. We've got the playoff series and the championship series. Yet in the middle of the court, you've got a big finals logo.
Yeah, I know.
They don't even call it finals anymore. Why have we got that in the middle of the court?
What is going on?
Jesus. Semantics.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to give me a headache by the time we're done. A few listener questions before we finish up. Dave on Twitter X has asked, question for you two. Is the current final system worth it considering the top four at the end of the regular season made the semifinals?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's just how it worked out this season. I still think that it's got merit because not just because it, you know, quote, copies the NBA system. As I've mentioned before, we've had something similar in the mid-2000s, right? So, I don't mind the concept. Because it keeps the interest of more fans, i.e. teams that are sort of pushing for that opportunity to make a play-in game. it gives them, it keeps the interest up for longer, I guess I would say, which is what we're after, right, as a league. We want more eyeballs still watching our games right down the stretch. We don't want a scenario where it's kind of like the four's locked in, you know, weeks before the end of the regular season and these games don't matter as much, et cetera. I think it's a key part of that with 10 teams. The interesting thing would be if they go to 12 teams, would they keep it or would they change it up? That would be the interesting thing. But, yeah, for me personally, I just think it was just how it worked out this year. I don't think it's a pointer to, you know, tossing it away and saying, let's just go back to a Final Four. I like it because it maintains the interest. That's my key takeaway from it. But, yeah, great question.
Matt has written in saying that the Hawks would have a case for Executive of the Year. 2 years ago, a borderline basket case to finishing in top spot, nearly sold out all their home games for the first time, likely in franchise history, recruiting Trey Kill III, Justin Tatum for 3 years as head coach. And he's got a point.
Matty Campbell, yeah, has done an outstanding job. And I agree 100%. You know, it is interesting that the real success story of this season has been the Illawarra Hawks top to bottom because, look, I understand the thought process. And I've no problem with Malcolm Watts getting the Executive of the Year, but I think whether it be Matt Campbell, whether it be Jared Novelli or the CEO, considering what they've done and considering that, as you mentioned, you outlined it beautifully. I mean, from Justin Tatum to Trey Kell, Lachlan Olbrich as well. But that's, you know, 3-2-1. For what they've done, it's been an incredible achievement because, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago we were talking about Illawarra Hawks and the fans and saying, where are the fans? When are they coming? What's going on? Does Illawarra even deserve a team? Not that I ever said that, but people were saying that, right? But this year, the connection between the community and that team is as good as I've ever seen it. Even the championship year, 2001, it wasn't like this. And even in, you know, Brendan Joyce's tenure, when he took them to another grand final against the Kings in 05, they would get great crowds. And Troy Pillen's spoken about this on our broadcasts down there. They get great crowds, but it wasn't the same vibe. It wasn't the same buzz. And that has a lot to do with, it's not just how the team is performing, but it's how they're connecting with the Illawarra community. They've done a fabulous job. So you have to give maximum credit to guys like Matty Campbell and Jared Novelli. And Matty was probably a touch unlucky not to win, sure.
Yeah, I thought it was a strange call to give it to the Bullets, that award, over the Phoenix and the Hawks. And I still think so. In fact, my opinion of that's actually firmed over the last week. And you look at where the Hawks were when they brought Justin Tatum in. They were 2-7 last season.
Yeah.
And then they found their way into the playoffs and now they're regular season champions. It's a remarkable turnaround for the Illawarra Hawks and I can't wait to see what they've got in the playoffs. One more from Ryan. It's mentioned an interesting anomaly with John Cain Arena and scoring in this particular game. 56 points were scored at the home team and the northern end on Sunday. 104 points at the southern end.
Did somebody open a door somewhere so the wind blew in?
Is there a scoring anomaly at JCA?
Or is the rim slightly lower, like a couple of inches lower or something? Wow, that's nuts. Great stat, though. Yeah. I love it.
I got to wonder, is there any...
It's like the Russians in Moscow in 1980, you know, closing the door for an overseas athlete, and then one of their athletes gets the tailwind and wins the long jump. I mean, turn it right up, stupid Russians. But yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
So next week.
Julian. Thanks for your questions, everybody. Once again, we love it. Love to chat about it. And it's great to hear that so many people are listening in.
So next week, it is a full semi-final preview. I'm not going to call it playoff series again. Semi-final preview. We're going to go through a breakdown basically line by line and give our picks for Southeast Melbourne versus Illawarra and for Melbourne versus Perth. And we've got a couple of great guests to help us do it.
We do. The aforementioned gentleman from the cross court column, Matt Logan, Mick Randall, will be head to head as well. Those two. No, it'll be great to have them both. They've done a fantastic job with the league, promoting the league. They're both great riders, and yeah, it'll be great to have them to give their opinions on the state of play in the NBL as well, and also their opinion on who will win both semifinals to get through. Because I don't give a rat's you know what about what the NBL calls it. It's a freaking semifinal. That's it. So who gets through to the championship series / NBL grand final?
So that's next week. It'll be at the usual time. So look out for that next week, next Tuesday morning. Until then, have a great week. Enjoy the FIBA break, the week off. And then we'll be back next Tuesday with a semi-final preview on the roundtable. We're down to four. The Hawks, the Phoenix, United, and the Wildcats. One of them's going to be NBL champions come the end of March.